Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 584. It's the 13th of September, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Michael Rosenberg, chairman of Starcom, ticker STAR, STAR. He discusses their recent results and answers private investor questions. Plus, I also have small cap commentator Doc Holliday talking about Audioboom, Wide Cells, and Tullow Energy. Plus, I also have Simon Weisenberg from K1T Capital, and his fund has done very well as a quant fund since it launched. And he sees, listen to this, the Russell 3000 Index, that's a benchmark of the entire US stock market, falling by 50% from the next 1 to 3 years. And you can view Simon's presentation on this by clicking the link here at voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Plus, I also have the top 5 most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. A big market sentiment. You can also see on the blog page there this week's most followed, the last 7 days' most followed companies. Plus, I also have the most liked RNS today on the website. And you can see the most disliked on the website if you go to the blog. Plus, today's suggested one for your watchlist has been submitted by Matthew, and it's Amrit Pharma, AMYT. I do hold stock in this company, and they had some good news out today. But I'll reveal the reasons why Matthew thinks you should add this company to your watchlist in a bit.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Michael Rosenberg, chairman of Starcom, ticker STAR, STARS. Nice little ticker there. Michael, thank you for coming on.
My pleasure.
Now, there's been a lot of people contacting me about your company on social media and on Vox, saying you have to get these guys on the podcast. And so I'm very interested myself to learn about your company. So, Michael, for people who are not aware, can you tell us what Starcom is all about?
Okay, Starcom is an interesting, still young company in the business of tracking systems. And by tracking systems, I mean systems that can indicate where a product is, where a car is, where a parcel is, where a person is. But much more than that, it can send a hell of a lot of data back to wherever you want it sent, which will measure what is happening at that particular point to that particular product or car or lorry or whatever.
Yeah, so for example, at the moment, what products do you have out there?
We've got, we have a product which is has a brand name of Helios, H-E-L-I-O-S. Mm-hmm. That's been around for some time. That is a system that most people will be familiar with, which goes into your car and will track where the car is if it's stolen. But much more than that, it sends data back, particularly useful for big organizations who are managing fleets, who want to manage the way in which the fleet is being handled, how it's being driven. So it's much more than just a plain locator. It can send a lot of information back, which is very helpful to anyone managing a large fleet. So that was our number one product that we started off with. Mm-hmm. It's a competitive marketplace. There are many people in that market. We operate globally throughout the world, selling our products everywhere from South America to Africa to the Far East. And we've tried to refine it a little bit by offering some additional features. And we're quite excited about one particular feature Most of these tracking systems work in connection with the cellular system, so GPS system. There are some places in the world where, for lots of reasons, when either because the GPS system doesn't work or there's no connection, or for security reasons, where the user wants to have the ability to link into a satellite signal. And we launched that about a year ago. We won a small tender with the United Nations, which was very, very nice, just for a small number, but it's a high profit and high margin product. And it's called the Hybrid, and enables the operator to switch between GSM and satellite. So that's the first of our products.
Yep.
The second of our products, identifying that there is an enormous need in the business of moving freight around the world. I mean, we all know that there are tens of thousands of containers shipping around the world all the time. And it's rather strange, in fact, when you think about it, that insurance companies have more or less insisted that anyone owning a car should have a tracking system in them. But only recently they started to apply the same discipline in the world of moving freight around. So we have a product called the Tetis, T-E-T-I-S, which fits very neatly into the door of a container. It's could be fitted within a minute, very simple. And that product, again, it has various types of that product. The basic one will track where the container is and where it's going, and if it goes out of sight. But more importantly, it also has the ability to track, to provide information, data information, particularly for companies shipping goods which are sensitive to humidity or to temperature, and it will send back a signal if the temperature or humidity falls or rises above an agreed level. It also has a light detector. A lot of people apparently try to break into containers through the roof. They basically cut a hole in the roof. As soon as any light enters, that will send a signal again. So these are products which people shipping, I would say, valuables. I'm not talking about people shipping a container of cotton wool, but if you're shipping pharmaceuticals or cosmetics, which have high value, then clearly there is a lot of interest in how you protect those and indeed how you reduce your insurance premiums. We're working with people like Panalpina, and we're working with people like Teva Pharmaceuticals, people like Estee Lauder. They've all ticked the boxes, liked the product, and I think our view is that for the next couple of years, 2 or 3 years, we see this product as a very interesting addition to our range. And then the third product that we launched about 3 years ago was launched under the brand name WatchLock. And that is a padlock, which again has the ability to send back data information to wherever you want it. If anyone should tamper with the lock, it'll immediately send a signal back to base. We launched that one about 2.5 years ago in joint venture with one of the biggest lock manufacturers in the world called Assa Abloy. The product, we sold about 25,000 of those since we started at a nice margin. We've learned over time that one of the criticisms of that particular product was the battery life, which was in the version one, only 1 month. But in the version that we launched in July this year, which is called the WatchLock Pro, the battery life is now 6 months, and it's a rather cheaper product. And we're working on, even as we talk, on a third version, which will hopefully be even more acceptable to the customer. So we're quite excited about the WatchLock. It actually has an application, although you might think in this modern technological age that padlocks are yesterday's business, you'd be surprised that anyone who has something in a remote place, you can think of railways, you can think of signal boxes, you can think of satellite communication dishes, which tend to be in remote or difficult to access places. And most of these are secured by padlocks, and having an intelligent padlock is quite clear to us from the market response we received, is a very interesting marketplace to penetrate. We have another product brand called the Kylos, which is kind of a variation on the Tetis scheme. The only reason I mentioned Kylos, apart from the fact that it's a nice product, it's a rather smaller one, is that recently we've identified a need in the air freight business. When people are shipping air freight around the world, you may know as a passenger that when you get on a plane, we're all told to turn off our mobile phones. Since most tracking systems, as I said before, work in conjunction with a cellular system and a GSM system, clearly you can't have a tracking system operating in the hold, or you're not allowed to, put it that way. So we've developed a product which is now ready for market, which will track the product, or track the small little container right up to the point when it gets into the hold. As soon as the plane takes off, it will react to the pressure in the hold, and it will automatically turn off the signal until the plane lands, when it turns it on again.
Okay. All right. So basically four sort of products there. And there's a question here saying it's related there, and you sort of mentioned it. But how many watch locks have been sold since launch?
We sold approximately 25,000 since launch of what I call version one. Version 2, which is the one we launched in July, I can tell you that we only launched it in the middle of July, and so far we've sold about 1,000.
Okay, and it says there, what is the recurring income generated there?
I haven't got a breakdown of, and it's not public knowledge, so I'm not allowed to give it to you, of the individual recurring income, but what I can tell you is that at our half year, you would have seen that out of the roughly $2.5 million of revenues, $850,000 of those were recurring revenues, which come from all of the products.
Okay, just had another one come in. So could you clarify whether you have a deal direct with Porsche or just a dealership?
Oh, this was a ridiculous exaggeration. This was about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. We appointed a dealer in Germany, who is one of the exclusive providers of Porsche in Germany, and they were very interested to provide our Helios as a tracking system for people who have bought their Porsche cars. Mm-hmm. It was completely exaggerated. People seemed to think that we had a deal with Porsche itself. We did not. It was only with a dealer who was simply a distributor of our products.
Okay, all right. So we're just looking at interim results for the 6 months ended 30th of June, recently released. So revenue was slightly down to $2.5 million from 2.6, and gross margins also softened from, 40 to 38%. So why was that, Michael?
Okay, we took this comes back to recurring revenues and the Helios part. The Helios, which, as I said, is a competitive marketplace, mm-hmm. We took a deliberate strategic decision to reduce our margins on the Helios to be competitive, because we can capture recurring revenue, which is far more valuable to us than the actual margin on the product. Yes. So we quite deliberately took a lower margin on the Helios, which still accounts for quite a large proportion of our sales, and we will continue to do that. And that should enable the recurring revenues to continue rising, as we hope they will, which of course more or less goes straight to the bottom line.
Yeah, and in this interim statement, you've underlined the fact that there's a strong sales pipeline for H2. Is that still the case?
It is indeed. We've been through in some detail all the opportunities, and there are many of them. I wouldn't say there's any one particularly large contract that will influence that decision, but we can see across the board a lot of continuing interest, and all of our salespeople are very focused on the second half. So we're feeling at the moment anyway, reasonably comfortable that we should be on track to achieve the analysts' expectations.
Marvellous. Okay, Michael, well, listen, if anyone needs any more convincing, could you give us three reasons why an investor should... click the follow button on your page on Vox Markets, please.
Okay, well, first of all, I would say that the container market is an enormous market. Something like $30 billion worth of products go missing or get stolen every year, but gives you an idea of the scale. We only need a relatively small proportion of that marketplace to do extremely well. So I think that that's one of the reasons. I think the watch lock is another reason. We feel that again, from the feedback that we've received, that it's a good margin project with a lot of opportunity. And frankly, the continuation of recurring revenues for all of our products, we get between $1 and $5 per month. It depends on the product and the scale of the business. We get between $1 and $5 per month recurring revenues. So we see recurring revenues, which this year should be, if we simply double up the figure for the half year, around about $1.6, $1.7 million. Within about a year, that'll more or less cover our G&A overhead. So once we get to that level, obviously there's an enormous upside.
Marvellous. Michael, thank you very much for coming on, and I look forward to chatting to you in the near future.
Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, Small Cap Authority, Doc Holliday. You're right, Doc.
Hello, sir. How are you today?
I'm all right, yeah. It's going to be one of the hottest days of September ever, apparently, today.
Boom!
There we are. So yeah, get your vest on, fella. All right, then. So stocks-wise, what are we looking at? Now, we've just been talking, and in fact, one of the stocks we mentioned is Audioboom. And I know you've taken a little slice, haven't you?
Yes, mate, I did, yeah. I didn't take it in the recent fundraise. I took some in the open market. A couple of buys, I think it was... I think it was at 2.6p and 2.47 or 2.45. I think I've got something like an average of 2.55p. So, yeah, that's me. That's my position there.
Well, do you know what? I was reading this morning their release from, when was this? The 5th of August. And I have taken a few myself today at 2.45 because... this strategic update they mentioned on the 5th of August, the company is currently in discussions with a Chinese fund for strategic investment of up to $8 million to be made at not less than 2.5 pence per share. Now, you can get a quote there just below that. And this is going to be done, it says, in September. So, announced by the end of September. So, you're assuming there's some news coming out before the end of September. And, you know, if this is its investment, you can now buy just below that price. So, I mean, that's surely it's a good deal, isn't it?
I'd have thought so. I mean, you know, the shares were trading a couple of weeks ago at comfortably over 3 pence. I think it was 3.125 on the mid. And it seemed quite happy. And I think one of the major reasons that... there's value now back in Audioboom is just by the fact that it's come off just so heavily over the last 12, 15, 18 months from multiple figures. You know, it was trading at 15, 16 pence in the market with a great deal of support. They raised a pretty hefty slug of cash at 12p or 11p, something like that, back then. And I think, you know, there's a massive argument that the shares have come off quite heavily and it now looks to be getting priced in that wholesale area. I think when you listen to Rob Proctor talk about the business and how if this was listed out in the US that it'd be trading at 4 or 5 times the multiple, given they've got one of the, if not the biggest spoken word platforms in the UK. I mean, it's a matter of time, I think, before somebody comes knocking on the door. And while shares are trading as cheap as this, there's always going to be that potential for a low ball offer at 4 or 5p that could come in. It's not a gimme, but it's certainly a possibility.
Yeah, and you got to look at the candy boy. The candy boy, Nicholas Candy, is up to 12% now. You know, announced, and he bought them at around about, I looked at the date on this, and he bought them at around about 3 pence. So he's, you know, so he's up to stake at a higher level than this. So I just think, you know, there's a nice level here at the moment. So it's a matter of, you know, point of interest there. A nice level at the moment they're trading at, which you can get below the placing price and below candy, you know, the candy boy. All right, anything else you're looking at, Doc?
One of the things that I thought that was worth mentioning was Widecells. It's a company, when it IPO'd, you and I chatted about it briefly. The shares come to market, I think, at 11.5 pence. It traded up to about 13 pence and then sort of trickled back. There's very little liquidity. There's been a bit of interest shown now behind the scenes. I had a call from a number of people actually asking, was I interested in selling my shares? I took a small slice in that that particular fundraise when it IPO'd. I didn't want to sell them. They were offering a slight premium at the time. And I think that there's about £200,000, £250,000 of stock being sought. And I think if they start coming to the market for it, because of the liquidity, it's going to drive it up quite hard. So I think, and I'm sure that there's a few phone calls have been taking place since I was called to try and procure some of that stock. That to me suggests that there's a greater interest. We don't know who the buyer is. You know, I have no idea who wants to purchase that stock. But what we do know in the IPO, Mitan Group and Gervais took 25% of the £2 million IPO. So they put half a million quid in. And I think, you know, when you look at Mitan's smallest investment, it's the smallest size company, it's Wide Cells. And the next one up from that is, I think it was Fish Republic, which went from 15p to 45p. And then the rest of the stuff's bigger again. So, you know, he's been prepared as somebody with that type of weight behind him to chuck in quite a substantial amount of cash. There's somebody in the background who's now looking to try and procure more stock, and I think it's a big indicator that this is going to go on and have a positive move. I would not be surprised to see this at anywhere between 15 and 20p in the very short term. Having said that, you know, if they happen to find a bit of low-hanging fruit at 13, 14p, maybe that transaction will take place and we'll be none the wiser. But it's happening. It's certainly something that's happening because I've had that interest shown towards me personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And third stock, and I wanted to mention, you said, I can't help but mention Tolu, because it's done really well, hasn't it? Literally, it will drop back a couple of minutes, or half an hour or an hour in a day, and then before you know it's rebounded into blue territory again, isn't it?
It's the gift that just keeps on giving, isn't it? You know, it was one that we picked up nice and early. Never made any secret about that. It's been a cracking company to be invested in. The liquidity back then was diabolical. If you look at the type of stock that goes through that company on a daily basis now, compared to what it was doing 3 months ago, you know, it's hard to believe that it's the same business. I think when you go and look at other companies out there, and you look at the you know, I looked at Sound Energy. It's a company I've followed since 2010, 2011. Their NPV for Badile is, I think, 480 million euros. You look at the NPV of that asset, that's got 178 BCF. You look at the contingent resource at in Botswana that Tolu are targeting, it's 3.3 TCF. We know sensibly that the reality of being able to get 3.3 trillion cubic feet of gas out of the ground to surface is unlikely, but you're going to work on a basis that they're going to get 10% or perhaps only 5. That would give their asset and the field that they've got a 3-well development program underway as we speak. One's drilled, it's on an extensive test and flaring gas. Two others have been drilled and they're doing some work there. When you think about the amount of gas that 5% of that 3.3 TCF would yield, you're looking at somewhere between 165 billion cubic feet, if it's 10%, 330 billion cubic feet. You then go look at that against perhaps, I'm only using it as a comparative, and it's not to say that the fiscal terms are as good in Botswana as perhaps they are in Italy. In fact, I'm pretty certain that they're not. But just to give you an idea, they've got 178 BCF asset at Badile that they put an NPV out there of $480 million, euros, I think it is actually. So you actually go look at that, then go look at the size of what Tolu potentially have got, and you can start to see why the comments are resonating that have come from Gilby and Colm Clunan suggesting that this is something that they believe is going to be an absolute monster, given the successes that Tony's had with Arrow and Sunshine Gas. I can see why the interest's there. Again, there's no guarantees. There's going to be an operational update at some point in due course, given the fact that they've already drilled into this this gas field, you know, a number of times. They've got the permit with the Botswanans to put the power station into action, and in the meantime, there's neighbouring power stations that they can feed gas into. So I think there's just a lot of opportunity, and it does take a lot of time for these things to all start to come to pass. But let Sound Energy be a perfect example, a company that when I had a meet and greet with the board back in September 2014, and a whole bunch of investors that I'd communicated with for quite some time come along and attended. There was 25, 28 of us. We sat in a room and we talked to Luca Madeo, we talked to James, we talked to a number of the junior members of the management team, and those guys give a lot of promise of how they were going to work hard, how they intended to apply themselves from this level in the market. The market cap was 15 to 20 million pounds. It's 420 million today. I think if you can have that sight and that vision, you can see that there are some synergies, although naturally, Tulu is still in its infancies in comparison to other companies. But I think the potential's there. It's been a great stock so far, and I honestly can see it moving into the double figures again quite quickly.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, as a plug for a former podcast of mine, I mean, it's worth listening to Tony Gilby, because he seems like a modest guy and quietly spoken. And I did ask him about his previous, you know, CBM projects, and then I said, which he sold, I think, 5 billion and just over a billion to Shell and BG Group. And I said, but, you know, so you've done this before kind of thing, but the thing in Botswana, will it in time have the same kind of potential? And he said, oh, more potential in Botswana. So and this comes from a guy who doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who ramps a stock, you know. He's a modest guy. He seems to know what he's talking about. So, yeah, you've got that interest in. He said there's a lot of things that has to happen before then, but the potential, you know, is there. And so that's always interesting, like you said.
Just before I go, the thing that you've got to look at is when you've done a deal and been involved in two companies that have both been sold off for over $1 billion. And I know, I think one of them was 3.8 billion or 4.2 billion, whatever it was, and the other one was 1.1 billion with Sunshine Gas. It's easy to come out and say, you know, people should buy the stock because we've done it not once but twice, and we believe we can do it again. In fact, we're almost certain. That's the easy thing to come out and say. The difficult thing to come out and say is what Tony says, and that is to talk through and to caveat where the risks lie, and to just point that this is still quite early in its cycle, but they're very confident in the future of the company. I think that shows that there's a level of responsibility. I think the market are warming up to it, and the one thing that we know for certain is that the shares don't weaken for very long, and I think, you know, that's got to be a testament to the company and the man.
Yeah, exactly. Marvellous, Doc. Thank you very much, and speak soon, fella.
Take care. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Simon Weisenberg from K1T Capital. Welcome back, Simon.
Hello, Justin. Nice to speak to you again.
Yeah, you can't see me. it's audio. It's audio only. Yeah. So you've been away for a little bit. Have you been away somewhere, or what have you been up to?
Yeah, we had a relaxed August and a few holidays, and most people tools down in August, so it's a bit of a relaxed time for us, basically.
Okay. Well, listen, we're always getting new listeners, and some people may not have heard you because you're on once a month, but you've had a break there, so we haven't spoken for a couple of months. So yeah. Just to explain to people about your fund, what is it you do there?
So we're a quant hedge fund, which means that everything we do is data-driven and predicated by our algorithm. We have a unique algorithm which provides us with signals, buy and sell signals, in in markets generally, but we trade the US equities market, so that's what we focus on. Those signals tend to be very accurate and enable us to profit from our trading.
Yeah, yeah. And just as an example of how the proof of concept is working, what's your performance like since you've launched?
Yeah, well, actually, I'd like to describe that. It's quite interesting. I'm looking at a slide which shows a table of our performance over the last 15 months. And we started trading in July 2015, and in our first year, you can't see the table, but we had 10 positive months in our first year, and we closed the year at the end of June up 24.28% for that full year. So our second year started obviously in July of 16, we had a bumpy start to the year, has to be said. We were actually down 5.9% in July, and we were down 0.7% for August. However, as at today in September, we've had a fantastic September, and we're up 27.75% so far in September. So we're showing a total of 19.34% for the first 3 months of trading in our second year. So in essence, that means we're up 24.28% for our first year, and we're up 19.34% for our second year.
Nice.
If some of your viewers or your listeners may follow us on our Twitter account at Kit Capital, and they'll know that we've been waiting for the US equity market to hit a long-term sell signal for the last 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. The market finally hit one of our long-term sell signals last Wednesday, allowing us to aggressively short the market, and within three trading days we made 27.75%. And we took advantage of the lower prices on Friday and Monday to lock in those profits, and the fund has currently got tiny positions in place to take advantage of any further falls.
Mm-hmm. So are you thinking this is definitely now the start of a bear market in some way, not a bear market, but a big sell-off?
Most definitely. We think this is the, what we've seen of the tremors before the full earthquake. Mm-hmm. What's really striking about the performance of the S&P 500 is that it really has gone nowhere in the last 15 months. I mean, it's risen just under 3% on a compound basis in that period, we're up 48.31% on a compound basis and 43.45% on a simple basis. But I'm sort of moving on. We're looking at the Russell 3000. We look at all US equities. If we look at the chart of the Russell 3000, which I'll email you after this chat. Obviously the Russell 3000 is an index of the largest 3000 listed companies in the US. Yeah. And this index is highly correlated to the S&P 500, and we monitor it as it effectively represents the entire US listed equity market. Mm-hmm. Now, our system generated a very long-term sell signal on the 7th of September, which was last Wednesday, and we took advantage of that by buying puts in the S&P 500. Those are options to sell. And on Friday the 9th of September, the US market declined by more than 2.5%. And on Monday, there was a 1.5% rally. What's really significant is if you look closely at the chart, the price action from Friday and Monday, which felt dramatic to us, is actually barely visible. The point being that a 1.5% or 2.5% move on a long term chart is negligible, and we feel there's much more to come.
Right,
so,
okay.
Yeah, I mean we believe that what we've experienced were just tremors that precede what we think might be a massive earthquake. We expect a 50% down move, stretching over 1 to 3 years.
And, what 50%?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Really? That's a bit scary, isn't it?
I'm afraid it is, yeah. And I mean, the reason why we're predicting such a large and lengthy decline is that...
That's someone panicking. Sell!
Yeah, well, the reason why we're predicting this large and lengthy decline is that the previous two declines, which are highlighted on our chart, basically the crash in 2000 and the crash in 2008, were followed by similar long-term sell signals by our system. So our algorithm predicted those turning points in the market, and there's no, you know, we feel there's a high probability that we'll see a similar decline from the signal that was hit on Wednesday last week.
Right. Any good news for people going long? I mean, do you have a time frame for that? People shouldn't sell everything here, and if they're starting to panic. But I mean, do you have a time frame over which this could start to happen?
Well, we think the decline has begun. You know, in our opinion, the top was last week, and you know, I can't predict it, you know, how long it's going to take. But we believe it will decline around 50% over either a 1 year or possibly between 1 and 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at the S&P 500 and looking at a chart which shows the decline on Wednesday through Friday of last week and the subsequent bounce on Monday in the US S&P 500. You can see that decline breaks down into five waves, and some of your listeners will know about Elliott wave analysis. And a five-wave move occurs in the direction of the trend at one greater degree. So, and if you're looking at this chart, it would suggest that there may well be further declines ahead. And what is also significant is that we noted that as of Monday night, well, last night, the high was 61.8% of the decline. And this is a common retracement noted in Elliott wave analysis. But, you know, in our opinion, what one should be remembering and keeping, you know, at front of mind is that the US equities market have a potential to decline by around 50%. So we really are at the beginning of this decline in our
right
opinion.
Lovely. Well, thank you for that, Simon. And, listen, I, for a while I'm sort of back in stocks now. For a while I was holding cash for a long time expecting something to happen. Yeah. And nothing's happening, and I do sense that we've been struggling, you know, for a while to get anywhere in the markets. And you think after a while, after banging your head on resistance for so long, you think there's only one way you can go. And a couple of sell-offs will scare people, you know, and you do feel almost gut feeling. I don't know whether it's just inbuilt fear, but, there is always this a worry. But there we are. There's something to think about, Simon. Thank you very much. And if you do send me the chart over there, I'll put it on the website there. And hopefully speak next week, if you're not all... next month, if you're not all skint.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Justin.
Okay, here's the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. They are at five. It's a new entry. Clough Natural Resources, CLNR. At four, Dave Rees, Managing Director, was on the podcast yesterday. At Keras Resources, KRS. At three, wow, it's nearly always there. It's CloudTag, CTAG. At two, a new entry, Clear Leisure, CLP ticker. And at number one, it's still Sky. The most liked RNS today on the Vox Markets website was Amrit Pharma. And they're also the most, today's suggested stock for your watch list. But they've been granted a US patent for its lead drug, Episalvan. So it's worth checking that out. Okay, and here's a bit of information. Submitted today as one for your watch list by Matthew D. Yeah, Matthew D. So what does the company do, Amrit Pharma? Are a clinical stage specialty pharma company focused on the best-in-class treatments for orphan diseases. How many shares does the company have in issue? 208 million. Current share price, 21 pence. Market cap, 43 million. What revenue and profit loss does the company generate? As stated in their half-year results out today, that's the 13th of December, for 6 months, revenue, 161,000 €400,000, a loss €4.1 million. This includes an operating loss before one-off items associated with RTO and acquisitions of €2.14 million. How much cash or debt does the company have? As of 31st of August, by the way, company had cash reserves of €10.7 million. List three reasons why people should add this company to their watch list. Number one, it has been granted a US patent for its lead drug, Episalvan. The US patent follows the grant of a patent in January 2016 by the European Medicines Agency for the use of Episalvan in the European Union for the treatment of all partial thickness wounds. Episalvan was acquired from Birken, has been awarded orphan drug designation in the US and the EU, and the market for this indication alone is estimated to be worth $1.5 billion per year. Reason two, the board has huge experience. Harry Stratford, non-executive chairman, has built two successful publicly listed pharmaceutical companies. Mr. Stratford founded Shire PLC in 1986 and was CEO for almost a decade. Shire grew from humble beginnings to be one of Europe's largest specialty pharmaceutical companies, and its stock is a constituent of the FTSE 100 index. Amrit's strategy is very similar to that of Shire, and Harry Stratford pioneered this approach as founder of Shire, the world's largest specialty pharma company. This is not to mention other board members. Do your own research. Little wink there. And reason three, when Amrit Pharma was admitted to AIM in April 2016, following the takeover of Fastnet Equity, they raised 10 million at 24 pence. The share price is currently 21 pence, so below that price there. So that's Amrit Pharma, AMYT ticker. Check it out. Do some research. And Matthew thinks you should add it to your watch list. So do I, actually. I think you should put that on your watch list, just as a board and the assets they've got there. Very interesting play. So that's it for the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Muchos apreciatos. Don't forget, do your own research. All you hear on this podcast are ideas. Nothing is a solicitation to buy in any way or invest. It's just research, all right? So thank you very much for listening. Again, muchos apreciatos.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.